What's up, everybody? John Niatawa, Chris Hetty here for another edition of the Half Court Press Podcast. I think we're going to start with Nebraska today.
Okay.
We kind of like to vary it up a little bit.
Yeah, we do. I think this might be the second time in a row we're starting Nebraska, but we bounce it back and forth.
We try.
Yeah, we do.
I mean,
it's usually what's ever the most like, okay, we should talk about this. This is more pressing, and then we'll go to the other. You know, or
right. And we missed a week. Last week we had a scheduling snafu, there's a lot to cover.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think the fact that Nebraska got its first win under Fred Hoiberg is
notable.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Especially after losing two to UC Riverside and Southern Utah.
Southern Utah. Yeah.
Looked pretty good in that first half.
Yep. Extremely good, yeah. What happened?
No, I'm more curious if that game is if Nebraska was kind of working its way up to that game,
mm-hmm.
despite losing two,
yep.
or if Nebraska just happened to find magic for a half. And actually, who Nebraska is more in line with what we saw at the start of the year. What do you
think?
So,
I think it's a good question. I think of what I've currently decided, and I think it might change a little bit. But after that game, I thought to myself, okay, I think this is just something that's going to happen sometimes. Like, I think that they're just going to show up if they hit their first couple shots and they really, you know, they get a couple stops and they really try and get out in transition. This is what we'll see. We'll see a team that, you know, I mean, they didn't shoot very well. They were 7-26 from three. But they got out and they were able to find shots. And I think that one thing that has been interesting with this team is they will, you know, Fred Hoiberg will draw up a play or he'll draw up something specifically for a player and that will get that player an open look, and then that player will decide not to shoot it and will continue on with the play. So there were a couple times early in that game, and I think that's kind of a small issue. Like if you get Mate Kvas open on the wing, like he needs to shoot it,
mm-hmm.
or you get Hanif Cheatham at the top of the key, like you need, that's the idea, is to get him to shoot it. But because they kept working it, they actually were able to find, you know, good shots, maybe not the best shot from that very first look, but they had some pretty even scoring. You know, Cam Mack had 24, Deshaun Burke had 17, Hanif Cheatham had 17, Kevin Cross had 10. And they did that again by shooting 7-26 from three. Like they're still not a good 3-point shooting team. So I think I don't know if you can necessarily copy that game and paste it all over the place, because I think 7-26 isn't good enough for, you know, they might be able to beat Northwestern, who, by the way, is just total garbage, apparently. I knew they'd be bad, but I didn't think they'd be that bad.
They beat Providence by playing zone and
hitting
shots.
Yeah, and then they lost to Radford. Like,
yeah.
It was like, it was bizarre. So maybe they're kind of one of those teams too. But so I think that this is just, sometimes this is going to happen where Nebraska's speed, we is going to be able to beat some teams. We saw some early, you know, I watched quite a bit of Iowa State on YouTube this summer, and one of the things that Iowa State did better than any team in the country when Fred Hoiberg was there was they were able to get out and transition even after a made bucket, and were elite at it. I mean, they were incredible at, you know, okay, Kansas State scores, they're getting, you know, one pass, two pass, it's a layup or a foul on the other end, and they're at the free throw line, and like 4 seconds has gone down. Like, that's what they want to do. What was that game? Saturday was the first time that we Friday, excuse
Friday,
me.
Yeah,
that was the first time that we've seen Nebraska actually do that. Hanif Cheatham did that a couple times, so that shows me that there are some elements that Hoiberg is preaching that they're starting to catch on. But again, I don't think that'll be there every single night. But I think if they can, you know, replicate that a handful of times this year, then I think that they can steal some.
Yeah, you circled right there on your box score, 20 fast break points.
Yeah, 20.
That's pretty significant.
And that doesn't even count a lot. Like, I don't know quite the rules of what determines a fast break point.
It's subjective.
What isn't.
Yeah.
I think I think it was more than this. Like, I think it was more than 20, because they had 50 points in the paint and they had 20 points in on fast, you know, fast break points. And when I saw that originally, I was like, I don't know, like that seems low, because that's how often they were getting out in transition. Yeah. Because you know, that probably is based on like a couple steals, I guess. But
I mean, I bet it's just like, is the defense back?
Is there nobody? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I don't think they would count fast break points as like you score after a made bucket, because technically probably the defense not, but should
I mean,
be.
I would. If you score within the first 5 seconds of the shot clock, that's a fast break point, in my opinion. Like, that's what I would consider. Or if you get two passes in a three, like, that's that, in my opinion, that's a fast break. So, yeah, that's kind of how they're going to live and die, is fast break and in the paint, and those kind of go hand in hand, I
guess. I was going to look something up, but I'll wait until maybe the next podcast. But there was there's a website that I look at called hoopmath.com.
Yeah.
And they track your efficiency in transition and in non-transition situations. And Nebraska, the difference was pretty significant going into Friday. And I imagine it's probably... their half-court offense wasn't very good in terms of efficiency. I think it measures effective field goal percentage, which is basically just kind of like a weighted field goal percentage that accounts for threes. So I would imagine that Nebraska's blueprint to success this year, whatever that ends up looking like, it's going to depend on whether or not the Huskers can run. Because that's what they're good at. They're not necessarily good at shooting threes. And as you kind of... discuss, you know, drawing up plays, even for a play that's like looks great and is run successfully, may not lead to a bucket.
Exactly. Okay, so case in point, through three games, okay, we're gonna play a quick game. Hopefully you didn't cheat.
I didn't.
Who do you think is Nebraska's leading 3-point shooter in terms of percentage?
I would guess Mate Kavas.
Nope. It's Thor at 33%. Guess who's number two?
All right, well,
Kevin Cross.
Oh,
at 30%.
Didn't he start 1-6?
That's the point, my man. Guess who their leading field goal percentage player is? This is somewhat surprising, but not super.
I don't know that. I would guess Burke.
So it's Hanif Cheatham.
Okay.
Part of that is over because
3 so far. No big deal.
Well, this is the point. Second is Thor, and third is Kevin Cross. Leading free throw percentage, there are only two players shooting above 80% from free throw. One is Kevin Cross. The other one is Thor.
Mm.
So, like, this is a weird team where, like, their best shooters aren't leading them currently in shooting. Like, I would say that their best shooters are probably Mate Kavas and Smart Curtis. Those are probably 1-2, in my opinion. And then maybe Gervais Green, then maybe Deshaun Burke. But Kevin Cross is playing really well, which is ironic because he had a pretty poor first game and people were like, who is this guy?
Yeah, and kind of made some like statements about who they thought he was, which I kind of did in my mind too. I'm like, this guy.
Exactly. And then you see the second and third game and you're like, oh, this guy. Yeah. And then you're like, wait a second, he's a true freshman? Like, holy cow. So like this is the thing where, and so a couple other Earth stats that I'm trying to be better at on the podcast this year than I was last year, but they shoot 39% from the field, which isn't horrible. Like, if you can shoot 40 or above, I feel like I'm cool with that.
As long as you're shooting a lot and not turning it over and giving up a lot of extra possessions to the other team.
3-point percentage, they're 23.1%, up from 21 from last week, and they're a 57% free throw shooting team. So, again, this is one of those things. This is kind of my point where, like, the first win is good. It's good to get that monkey off the back. You could kind of tell there was a sense of relief. Like, that was kind of nice. But if you continue to shoot this way, you're not going to win a ton of games. Like, you are going to win a couple because you're faster and because you can get out and transition. But, like, this isn't quite the blueprint yet. And I think we'll see that, you know, maybe in January or February, what the blueprint actually looks like for a win.
I see. Yeah. Because... Well, I guess my question would then be, what happens if they can't run?
Right.
What happens if a team totally just sort of says, either the team says we're slowing the game down or says five back in transition and you're not going to be able to.
There is, and I mean this, no logical reason why you should play man against Nebraska or you shouldn't just like let them get the defensive board and just get everybody back.
Mm-hmm.
You do that, you're probably going to. Probably win 80% of the time against Nebraska at the very
some
least.
Zone and,
like,
yeah.
Like, this, like, make them make shots.
Hey, you know what I was going to ask you about this? Because you wrote a little bit about Fred Hoiberg, sort of. I mean, he's like a shot doctor, right? Like,
he's
a guru.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've talked to them about this, but like, what improvement is realistic throughout the year? Now, I would imagine that because, and you laid out the numbers from some of these guys, like, Samari Curtis is a better shooter. Mate Kavas is a better shooter than they've shown. So there's going to be some natural improvement, and there might be some of that on the roster as well in other places. But as the season's from today till the end of the season, how much better mm-hmm. can guys get as shooters mm-hmm. as the season progresses? Or is this an off-season sort of like project that he's going to have to undertake?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And I don't know the exact answer, but I do know, you know, Fred has said a couple times, like, they shoot more with this team than any team he's ever coached. Like, they shoot and shoot and shoot. They will, when there's media availability, they'll say, hey, you know, you can, you know, they'll probably be available anytime between 10:05 and 10:20, depends on shooting. And it's usually 10:20, 10:30, 10:45, and which is fine. I don't care. But you walk in there and that's what they're doing is they're shooting. And so we kind of get to see this example of, you know, Fred was behind Cam Mack, like hitting his shoulders right. Or the first time that we were able to see practice a little bit while they were shooting, he was going over footwork with Hanif Cheatham. Like there's going to be, I think, incremental change throughout the year. The only way to become a better shooter is to continue to shoot and just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. Right. So I think in general, I don't think this is something that you can fix right away. But I think eventually, if you practice something long enough, like you'll get a little bit better. Mm. I don't know how good of a shooting team this current team is. I would imagine they'll be better in the Big Ten tournament than they are, you know, on Friday. Like I just in general, I think that they'll get better because the thing is they absolutely have to. Like that's the only way they can be able, in my opinion, to compete night in and night out is to be able to actually hit threes, and that's something they haven't really shown that they can do yet. So. But even though they might not be very good, this is what you get when you pay, you know, $3.57 million for a head coach is you get Fred Hoiberg, who led the NBA in 3-point percentage his final year in the NBA. He's one of the all-time leading scorers at Iowa State. Have you ever seen him? I mean, it's a pure shot.
I've seen highlights.
I mean, it's basically
show on ESPN when Iowa State was playing or something like that.
Take like a 6 foot.
Never seen him shoot in person.
Take like a 6 foot, like, or get two yardsticks and put it together and like make a straight. Like that's what, it's very like exactly what you want. And
does he ever shoot with the guys?
So like, it's funny.
Not to show him up necessarily, but kind of like, hey,
yeah, I
credibility, I mean, here it is, jumper, yeah, swish.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you don't listen. Yeah, you don't believe me? Watch this. Yeah. Yeah. What's funny is whenever we do like get to watch practice or whatever, when they'll do like a shell drill, he'll be at the top of the key but he misses on purpose. But like he misses exactly on purpose. Yeah, like he puts it exactly next to the rim where like he wants that guy to get the board. It's
almost impressive that he's able to miss on
the exact way he wants to. Yeah, it's impressive. It's really impressive.
Over and over again.
But
so
it's one of those things where like I think, you know, Mitch Balick has like a perfect jumper.
Yeah,
like it's
nice.
Exactly what you want. There are players on Nebraska's team who don't have really great looking shots. Like Cam Mack has a kind of a lot going on above his waist. And, you know, Ivan, I mean, even like there was a time we were watching practice and the strength coach was, or the trainer was talking to Ivan about his foot placement in terms of like where his feet need to be when he's shooting, because the way he was shooting was putting stress on his like ankles and his knees. And it was like, this is why coach is telling you to shoot this way, because like do that a couple times, like just jump like that 4 times in a row. Like it kind of hurts. Like that's going to kind of add up. So it's like, you're basically, you know, John Wooden would begin every single year by teaching his team how to tie their shoes correctly. And so this is the equivalent of Fred Hoiberg teaching the team here. Okay. But this is going to be kindergarten basketball again. This is how you shoot, you know? And so I think because of that, they will get better because you've got a coach like that, and because they're shooting so much. How much better? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Because
and like as the season wears on, your legs will wear down.
Exactly.
Everyone gets tired, and
yeah,
it's obviously harder to hit an open jump shot in a game, even if you're wide open.
Exactly.
Versus like
I just
sinking them in practice.
I think in general, like the one power that you know Fred Hoiberg's system really tries to hone in on is like what Creighton can do sometimes, which is like, all right, we're down two in the span of the next 4 minutes, we're going to hit 5 threes in a row. And it's a totally different game. And it just takes, you know, if you're on the road, it takes the air completely out of the gym and you're totally in control now, or like it sets the arena on fire. And like, it's just a totally different game. Mm. I don't know if Nebraska really has that. I think they can maybe hit two or three in a row, maybe like on a really nice night. And that's, again, you know, if you're going to play the way you know, Hoiberg wants to, especially this year, you need that element, and then they really don't. Right. That's why I think it kind of looks as ugly as it does sometimes.
It's funny. I was thinking about this earlier. You mentioned this, and I'm going to transition to Creighton a little bit. But like the one of my favorite plays in basketball, might be my favorite play, I'm not sure, is the three-pointer to silence the home crowd. You know, like the road team player hits a three to when the crowd's going crazy trying to like will its team to get a shot, get a stop, and then the visiting team, like someone bangs in a three.
Yeah.
And then the home team has a call timeout. Like, that's one of my favorite moments.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
It's such a, like, you know, the contrast in excitement kinda, to just, like, agony.
It's one of those moments where you have to kind of, like, okay, you have to sit up in your chair and be like, okay, all right, I have to kind of reevaluate what's going on.
Right. It's like
things are happening.
It could be a defining moment.
Yeah.
But I will say, after watching Marcus Zagorowski for the Jays dive not once but twice in succession to get a loose ball, and then that transitioned into a alley-oop on the fast break. Like, those effort plays might be...
That was a hell of a play.
Yeah, I don't know if I've... I mean, I've only been covering Creighton for 3 or 4 years now, but, like, that wasn't... It was... he was, like... You know, I was watching it just play out, and I see him dive first, and I knew, you know, the ball's on the floor. Of course, he's going to dive. He dives, and it trickles, like... trickles off his hand or whatever, and he's like on his hands and knees, and you think, okay, he's getting up because he's got to defend because the ball's going right to another an opposing player, and then he somehow manages to dive again and kind of lunge forward and grab the ball away from a opposing player who had two hands on it. You know, he had two hands on it, but Marcus reached out, and I think the momentum of his body like falling to the floor and having that leverage being low got him the ball and changed the game. It was kind of nice as a reporter to have that moment.
You're like, well, got my lead. Story. Here we go.
We will write this. even though Creighton still had to make plays down the stretch to win that game.
Yeah.
Against Louisiana Tech.
How much did they end up winning that game by?
10.
Yeah.
I mean, it stretched out toward the end. But that play was kind of a defining moment, and it might be. I mean, the Jays hope that it can be a play that sort of defines who they are as a team. They're kind of in this interesting sort of paradox right now where they want to be, they want to play fast, obviously. They want to be on the attack from the moment they have the ball. Everyone is sprinting to take their positions on offense, and then they're operating with pace in the half court. If they indeed are forced into the half court, they can't score quickly. But then on defense, they want to be tenacious and relentless. And, you know, they don't have a ton of size, particularly when Christian Bishop's on the floor playing the five. But they think that, and honestly, they don't have a lot of great one-on-one defenders either. But they think that as a team collectively, if they come in with a tough mentality and they're willing to make the hustle plays and outwork their opponents, that they can sort of build their DNA around that defensively, and that'll be good enough because on offense they'll be able to to be elite. The challenge, though, and you know, that's good in theory, and we've seen examples of the Jays doing that even back to last year toward the end of the season. There were moments when the Jays did that, and I've seen it in practice, but the challenge is doing it for 40 minutes.
Sure.
And that's what they've run into is they only have, and with the injuries that they have, you know, they've really, the last week they played at Michigan and hosted Louisiana Tech, and they essentially ran with a 7-man rotation, and honestly it was more like 5 guys, or 6, maybe 6 against Louisiana Tech because Christian Bishop was in foul trouble, and then at Michigan I guess maybe it was 6. Sharif Mitchell didn't play much in the second half. Their starters, 4 of their 5 starters logged 34 or more minutes at Michigan. So there's a lot of, you know, 35 minutes of up and down basketball where you're trying to outwork. Everyone's trying to outwork the opponent. Like, the idea is Creighton is going to, wants to be, to win games with its ability to wear teams down offensively. That's its general sort of game plan going into games. That's why it built this offense around pace and space. But now it also wants to bring tenacity defensively and hustle and dive after loose balls and, you know, sort of fight their way to rebounds and keep teams off the offensive glass. even though they're smaller and shorter. It's hard to do that
with seven guys.
With seven guys for 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're in that this space where it's like, how much do can you do it? One.
Yeah.
I think that this last week would argue no, not over an extended period of time, but I guess can you do it? And if so, if not, then what options do the Jays have?
Yeah.
Like, do they abandon sort of what they want their blueprint to be in February when ideally, presumably, Davion Mintz is back healthy with the team, but they expect him back much sooner than them. But you think of what they will be in February with him in the mix, and then Denzel Mahoney becomes eligible in December. It's like, why compromise sort of what we want to be now just for a couple weeks, two or three weeks maybe? Why not just try to do what we do and sort of maintain, keep your head above water almost is what it seems like. But they're going to be going through a really challenging stretch now where they play, you know, this weekend. The teams aren't, they're not going to jump off the page at you. I think North Florida played Florida pretty tough. Florida's had, maybe it's been proven to be a little bit overrated, but Florida's still a good team. And Creighton plays them on Sunday. Friday's Cal Poly. Cal Poly's not very good. But then Creighton goes to Vegas for a tournament. And so there's a lot of games jam-packed in a couple weeks with a short rotation for a team that wants to play fast and also out-hustle you on the other end. It's a lot. And I think last week kind of proved that. I don't know, is it a feasible sort of short-term plan?
And there's
the long-term plan is okay, but short-term, I don't know.
And the difference is like, obviously you're going to, because I think sometimes when we say like, we're going to, you know, they want to go hard for 40 minutes. And I think a lot of people think like, well, doesn't every team want to go? Like, obviously you're going to play hard for 40 minutes. But the difference is like, after every TV timeout, reinforcing like, hey, we're running, by the way. Like, you're getting it and you're going. And like, there's not a point where, you know, you have a point guard looking over and McDermott's like, hey, let's cool it for a second. Let's just walk up and run something. They want to go continuously, right? And that's what that's what they want. And maybe, I don't know, maybe, do you think maybe it changes because, like, do you think it changes in the short term right now because they're going to play five games in, you know, less than 10 days? Or I guess however many days, 2 weeks?
I think it's four games in a week.
So how, so do you think...
Four games in 8 days.
So basically, do you think they're like, all right, one of these nights we're gonna have to slow it down a little
bit. Might.
Or
you either slow it down. This is just my thought on it. You either slow it down or you give more playing time to a redshirt freshman Jet Camfield, who's a walk on, and true freshman Jalen Windham. Both of those guys didn't play. Maybe Jet played a little bit in one of those games, but for the most part, neither of them saw the floor against Michigan or Louisiana Tech. So either you extend the bench and then potentially open yourself up to some deficiencies on one end or the other of the floor. I mean, Jet is kind of like a savant offensively already, even as a redshirt freshman. They kind of trust him to make the right play, but he's shorter, not as like thick and stocky, so he's a liability on defense. And then Jalen Windham is a guy who can knock down jumpers all day, but on defense, he's still learning.
Yeah.
So it's like both of those guys, you put them on the floor, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
There could be some... opportunity for an opponent to exploit those players, less so for the vets that they have that they've relied on the last week, which is why I think that they played so many minutes. I don't know. I think that's that to me is what's going to be interesting to watch Friday when they play Cal Poly and going forward, just because this last week kind of showed you, you know, when Creighton, and I think the players are encouraged by the fact that, like, hey, when we've been able to like put the pedal to the floor, even though we can't put it to the floor, like we're trying to put it to the floor, but the card's only going at 60.
Well, I also,
and we think, but when it's going 100, like we're pretty good.
Well, I mean, that Michigan Creighton game was proof of that, in my opinion.
The first half.
Yeah, you watch Creighton, and every time, and I think Michigan might actually be better than I thought they were. I didn't know how good they'd be with John Howard, but he impressed me in that game. But I think in general, though, you know, they've got some big dudes. Xavier Simpson's one of the best defenders in the Big Ten, at least maybe in college basketball in terms of guard defending. John Teske's huge. You know, they've got some big dudes that they're able to guard. Michigan is. And Creighton, but there were points where I was watching the game and I was like, they're doing whatever they want. Like, they're getting whatever that they want. And I wasn't able to catch most of the second half, but I think the fact that it is encouraging to them that, okay, even against Michigan, a team that's used to going up and down, like, we can score against them because, you know, by doing what we want to do, going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
The question is like, how long can you sustain that? Like yeah. at a certain point, do you need to be like, okay, these next 4 minutes, let's take, you know,
yeah.
obviously look to push, but let's just kind of cool it. Because the thing is like, you don't want to run your guys into the ground. You don't want to do what Tim Miles did, you know, last year when you had basically four guys playing.
Yeah, you don't want to run your guys into the ground in November.
Exactly. That's like, my point.
You need them
yeah.
in February.
Yeah, and get them in yeah. better shape, and then you can do that in February, and you can kind of, you know, squeeze their.
And again, they're going to have reinforcements at some point, but what happens between now and the reinforcement? That's the question. The interesting stat against Michigan was that Creighton got, how I charted it was they got, the Jays got 12 points in early shot clock situations in the first half mm-hmm. and zero in the second.
Hmm.
So whether that was fatigue.
So what's early to you? Was it
first, I don't know, 7 seconds sure, of the shot clock, yeah, something yeah. like that. Maybe it was first 10.
Yeah.
I can't remember. But essentially, when they pushed it, they yeah. were extremely efficient yeah. when they got a good shot or when they got a shot early in the shot clock. But I don't know whether it was Creighton's fatigue. That's what Coach Greg McDermott mentioned after the game was fatigue. Maybe it was Michigan. I thought Michigan ratcheted up its intensity, like what you were saying, where Michigan was giving away everything mm-hmm. on defense. Like I think they got a pretty strict talking to at halftime, and there was some pride that you saw emerge from some of their veterans who have built their identity over the last 2 years
exactly.
on defense.
Yeah,
and if, like you said, Xavier Simpson, one of the best perimeter point defenders in the Big Ten, and maybe the best post big man defender in Teske. I mean, he led the league in block shots last year. Mm-hmm. I think that team was like, okay, this is not happening
yeah,
on it was, our home
yeah,
floor anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's some of that. But bottom line is the advantage that Creighton had in the first half that was like in terms of hustle and outworking was gone in the second.
Sure.
And in this game against Louisiana Tech on Friday, the Jays for about the first 10 minutes of the second half lost that advantage as well.
Hmm.
And their lead went from 13 to 3. Or two.
Yeah.
And Marcus Zagorowski made that play and suddenly it started to flip sure, again. It yeah. took a little while for Creighton to really grab hold of that game again, mm-hmm. but you could tell that it sort of ignited a fire under that the entire Creighton yeah. team and they were, it was sort of a reminder of like, oh yeah, that's how we want to play.
Right.
Let's
yeah.
do that now.
Yeah. Sometimes so, you get lost in the game and
yeah.
it's like, oh yeah, okay, let's just figure this out.
But before yeah. Marcus made that play, I think Creighton had gone like 11 possessions, only managed 3 points. The mm-hmm. lead was dwindling. As a matter of fact, the possession before that play, a Louisiana Tech player like out-muscled Tyshawn Alexander for mm-hmm. an offensive rebound and got a stick back. And like the arena was quiet. You could yeah. hear the yelling from Louisiana Tech's bench. Like those guys were fired up. And then next time down, Marcus makes a play and the arena explodes. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different ballgame. So that's what they want to do. I'm just so eager to see maybe is it like, is there a way where you can like dial it back
right.
and then dial it back up?
Because you also don't want to be,
you don't want to dial it back and then be like, uh-oh, how do yeah. we dial it back on? Well, Marcus, can you dive on the floor
yeah,
again?
Yeah, yeah. So, can you do that same thing again? Yeah. That like crazy play that right. like that's going to happen once in college basketball
yeah,
this year?
Yeah, exactly.
Because the other thing is too, is you don't, especially if you're Nebraska or Creighton, you don't want to come out and admit like, hey, we're going to go a little slower. Like that's not what people want to hear. And that's not what you want your team. Like,
mm-mm.
but that doesn't mean that in game, be like, all right, let's run these three sets right in a row.
Right.
And let's maybe don't tell them, hey, let's cool it for a second, but be like, hey, let's take our time
right.
and like try and get these. Knowing like, okay, if you can get it run. Because that's the thing too, is like the fact that they're so successful in those first 10 seconds of a shot clock proves that like that's kind of, they have to.
Yeah. No, like, they need to, no doubt.
They not only they are it. They good at it, but they have
that's
to.
Like, it's like part of the lifeblood of their yeah. success offensively yeah. is to be that.
Yeah.
And to like defensively, like they have to too, because yeah. their best defender is a perimeter defender is Davion Mintz. He's out.
Yeah.
So like they do have to outwork the other team because otherwise they're just going to get beat.
Right.
Because they're not as good defensively. Right. So yeah, it's very interesting. You know, two of Creighton's best players over the last couple of years in terms of just being those hustle guys who kind of like champion their pace were Marcus Foster and Khyree Thomas, and both of those players admitted to me various points, like when they would try to steal breaths.
Oh,
like,
really?
Hey, this is when I try to relax.
Yeah.
No surprise here. Marcus Foster was on defense, and Khyree was on offense.
Oh, really?
Khyree was on offense.
That's
but
good.
There are moments in the game where you have to take a break.
Yeah.
And that was actually interesting talking with Khyree before his last year at Creighton about trying to be smarter about when you take a break and maybe you can kind of manage it, keep an eye on the clock of when the media timeouts are coming and when you know you can really sort of give it, give everything you got, because you're about to get,
yeah,
about to get a break. And so,
well, I mean, I think what, you know, you saying that reminds me of, you know, there's a really good Lee Jenkins story about LeBron's block. It was one of the final stories he had, and LeBron exerted so much energy, like running back and blocking that shot in Game 7, that he was like, Kyrie, you're doing anything because I'm done. Like, yeah. Because LeBron knew, like, okay, I need to make sure that I'm going to use my energy now because I'm not going to be able to use it later. Yeah, and I'll have somebody else figure it out.
Right.
But, like, that's the thing. You kind of have to play a mind game of, like, okay, when am I going to just, like, totally sell out?
There's a finite, you know, amount of, like, gas in the tank. Mm-hmm. And that's what Creighton has got to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jays are going to, like I said, they play Cal Poly, North Florida, Friday, Sunday, and then a week from, we're recording this on a Wednesday, so a week from tomorrow, they start their tournament in Vegas where they play San Diego State, and then the next day they will play either Texas Tech or Iowa.
Hmm.
So it's an important stretch for the Jays from an NCAA tournament resume standpoint. Like, potential landmines at home that you want to avoid, obviously, and then out in Vegas, you definitely don't want to go 0-2, and then you're climbing uphill a little bit as you lead into conference play in terms of building a resume, but it's going to be really hard to get a win. So
yeah.
No matter, I mean, San Diego State's pretty good, and Texas Tech is, well, it's hard to say. They're beating up on nobodies right now. But
like, Chris Beard is someone you clearly don't want to mess around with anymore. Now, Iowa, on the other hand, I don't know, man.
I know. They got blown out by DePaul.
Yeah. I think that they're better than that game. Yeah. I think they're better than that game. It was interesting, though, of, like, I was telling somebody this today. I was watching that game, and there's a certain level of anger that I think people can get to where, like, they shut down, and it was like they would pan over to Fran McCaffrey on the sideline. There's, like, 6 minutes left. Iowa's down, like, 25, and he's just sitting there. And you could tell that he's, like, screaming internally.
Right.
And he's just like, these guys won't listen to me. This won't listen to that.
What is it that is so comedic about that? I think...
It's
really funny. Cause, well, you know that he's the guy who, like, chased down a ref.
Yeah, exactly. Knowing, like, what this guy has done, you're like, holy cow. So I would imagine it'd be a Texas Tech game. But that would be... Man, that would be fascinating, too. Because I think the way that Texas Tech plays, they want to grind you out.
Yeah, the way they play defense. I mean, getting past San Diego State is no automatic
feat
for the Jays. If they were to get past San Diego State and play Texas Tech, it would be a really important learning experience. By the way, I just want to share this real quick. Creighton's top three guards are ridiculous right now. Mm-hmm. Marcus Zagorowski, Tyshawn Alexander, Mitch Bally, like they are incredible to watch, and it is unfortunate that they're having to do so much at the moment. So I hope for their sakes they can get some bodies back to help them, because let's just see what their shooting numbers through. I mean, it's three games, you know, so everything's going to change. Like,
yeah, but
like
still,
we've said,
yeah.
Tyshawn Alexander is 11-19 from three.
What?
Marcus Zagorowski is 10 of 20. Mitch Balick is 8 of 21. So those three together have 29 threes on the year so far.
Wow.
They're averaging 18, 17, and 12. Marcus Zagorowski has like a 2.5-1 assist to turnover ratio. The way they work together, the way they play basketball together, I mean, it is a lot of fun to watch. So hopefully, like I said, they can get some help, because you don't want to see them wear down, because then, I mean, obviously that's a detriment to what Creighton wants to do. They can't have them wear down, but just from a pure fan of basketball,
right?
Point.
Yeah,
it's fresh.
Yeah, I don't want to see Cam Mackerel's ankle because I love watching Cam Mack play basketball. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Real quick, what's Nebraska got?
So they play Southern on Friday. Southern is not very good. Mm. They are. I'll say this in a way that's going to scare people, but they are UC Riverside bad. So like UC Riverside was bottom, you know, 300 something in KenPom, and Southern is about there too.
Mm.
So they'll play Southern. So that's kind of a take care of business at home game. And then they will go to the Cayman Islands, where the Bill Moose Bowl will happen on Monday.
Bill Mills, is he going to be there?
I doubt it. Okay. I don't think he's been to a game yet. So it'll be...
Headlines. No, I'm just kidding. Go on.
I look up in the box every game. He's not there. So they will play Washington State. who is not very good. They fired Ernie Kent and they hired a new coach, and they're Washington State. So
I actually like their grinder. New coach, by the way.
Yeah, but it's
he came from San Francisco. Yeah. And so I think he's
won
a
lot of
guy.
Games in San Francisco.
Yeah,
too,
I think
yeah.
he's a smart guy. But yeah, like you said.
Well, so we'll just kind of see.
It feels like a toss up.
You win that game. The winner of that game plays the winner of George Mason, Old Dominion. Old Dominion went to the tournament last year. But I'm just, you know, preliminary reading, I'm pretty sure they're a little banged up.
Mm.
So they'll be a little behind. But so it'll be George Mason, Old Dominion. And then the other side of the bracket, so Nebraska will play one of these teams, be it in the championship game, you know, third place game, or, you know, in the loser's bracket. They play. So there's Colorado State and New Mexico State. And Mexico State went to the tournament last year. They should have won.
Beat Auburn, right?
Isn't they should have beat Auburn. Yep. I actually picked them to beat Auburn.
So did I.
And they had an open shot at the buzzer, and they airballed it.
Yes.
Lost. And then
didn't
Auburn,
they give up a layup? Wasn't that game where the dude was like going
yeah,
in for a layup
so.
And then he kicked it out, and you're like, what are you doing,
yes,
sir?
Yeah. But if I remember this correctly, and I'm going to have to go watch this and remember later, but I'm pretty sure he went in, had an open layup, kicked it out instead, and then they made that three.
Oh,
like,
that was
tie
or that was the foul, or he got fouled or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
or
yeah,
there was
yeah,
it like
right.
paid off in some way.
Yeah, that's right.
But
that's
what
right.
happened was at the very end of the game, there was an out of bounds, like sideline out of bounds, and they got an open three,
that's
and the
right.
guy missed it.
I remember.
So Mexico State's kind of got something going on. They'll play Colorado State in that first game, and then Loyola Chicago, who they're not quite the Loyola Chicago mm-hmm. of a couple years ago. They kind of basically graduated everybody, I believe.
Definitely their top two, years. Their two best players.
Yeah, like Clayton Custer isn't there anymore.
Like, I think Custer's still there. I think
is he?
Yeah. I think that they
I
lost
thought,
their
I thought
two
he was
guards.
A senior last year.
I don't know.
Because he was a year younger than, maybe he was 2 years younger than me, because I played against him. And
oh,
he,
did you really?
Yes, yes. We lost 60-52. He kicked us out of state, yeah.
He kicked you out of state?
Yeah, he did, yeah. He was, Bellevue, or not Bellevue, Bellevue Northwest. He was good. I mean, he walked in the gym and he knew that he was the best player on the court. and I like,
and rightfully so. I mean, a D1 basketball player.
Oh yeah, like, he wasn't as good as Siobhan in high school. Siobhan Shields in high school.
Yeah.
But he was pretty damn good. So Loyola Chicago will play South Florida.
By the way, Custer is gone.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I was thinking,
yeah.
For some reason, I got confused with Custer and Kretwig, even though they're two totally different players.
right.
But, like, for some reason,
is like, you list off these schools, and Nebraska is clearly the biggest name in terms of just, like, an athletic department, budget-wise, of just, you know, maybe they don't have the basketball history, but just where Nebraska is as a current program. Like, if Nebraska was in this bracket last year with last year's team, they would have won it. By probably every game by 15.
Yeah.
Like it wouldn't have even been close. So this is an interesting point for Fred Hoiberg and his team, because again, they'll have to play, you know, four games in a week. They'll have to play three games in the Cayman Islands. I think this is the portion, this right now is kind of figure out who your guys are part of the season, figure out who you can trust. They've already been thrown into battle for, you know, especially Southern Utah. They kind of had to, okay, you know, there's 2 minutes left and this is a really close game. This is overtime. This is double overtime. Like, we need to kind of figure out who we are. And so this will be an important kind of stretch. The last thing I wanted to mention Nebraska-wise before we talk Creighton's tournament and kind of wrap up. So, Shamil Stevenson, right?
Yes.
He is they're currently, unless something has, you know, broken since we started this podcast. He is currently waiting for a immediate eligibility waiver. So, quick background on that. He went to Pittsburgh. He played a season at Pitt, and then he played in a couple games his second as a sophomore, and then transferred to Nevada. So he transferred to Nevada for Eric Musselman. Eric Musselman then leaves that job for Arkansas, and then Shamil Stevenson transfers again to Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So originally we had been told that he had, I think it was 2.5 years or it was 1.5 years of eligibility remaining. And it must have been 2.5 years of eligibility remaining because he transferred in the first half of his sophomore season. And so that's what we had originally been told, and that they were going to apply for a waiver to get him for the full year of eligibility.
Right.
So there was an assumption from me as well, and from a lot of people, that no matter what happened, they had applied for a waiver, no matter what would happen, he'd be eligible for the second half of the season.
Right.
So that, so there was a point last week when, you know, we keep asking and we keep, you know, trying just to see updates, and we keep getting back, you know, there's no update, there's no update. And so I shared something on Twitter that was like, you know, this doesn't really matter because he's going to be eligible at the end of the semester anyway. And so I actually got in a conversation with a couple people about that tweet, and they were like, hey, by the way, just so you know, that that's not exactly right. So Nebraska has applied for an eligibility waiver. So apparently, and so my plan is like, once all of this happens, whether he gets it accepted or denied, then I'll go through and I'll sit down with a bunch of people and be like, okay, what exactly happened here? Because we're kind of in the dark at this exact moment. But from what I understand, from what I've been told, is there is apparently Nebraska would have had to apply for a waiver for him to become eligible in the second half of the season, or in the first, or for the full season, right? Mm-hmm. So there's either a half eligibility waiver or a full eligibility waiver, and they went with the full season eligibility waiver, and they're still waiting to hear back on that.
I see.
So that's where they currently stands at this moment. I know that they've been...
I guess, yeah, I didn't realize that he needed a waiver to be eligible
at the
halfway point.
I didn't either. And so, maybe
that's true, though. He didn't transfer, even though maybe he didn't... Did he play? He not play the second...
No, he did not.
Yeah. Do you remember when he announced his transfer from Nevada?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. But I do know that, again, and we don't know exactly the date of when the waiver was applied for.
Yeah.
But the first time that we spoke to Fred Hoiberg when practices had begun this fall, he had said that they had not applied for one yet. They were waiting.
Hmm.
And so sometime between then and then their Nebraska's media day, where we're able to talk to, and that's like mid-October when we were able to actually talk to all the players a couple weeks before the season, Shamil had said, we've applied for one, we're good to go. Or not we're good to go, but we've applied for one, we're waiting, we should be here back soon. So it was at some point in then that they actually applied for it, rather
right.
than in the summer. And I imagine from talking with people about waivers and when you would apply for them and things like that, they were just trying to make sure. I mean, there's so many different elements that go into all of these, and it takes kind of a while, and there's so many boxes to check and whatnot, that they wanted to make sure it was ironclad, especially if they were going for kind of a full season of eligibility.
Yeah.
I do know that they've expected a decision around now. Like they think it's going to come any day now that they should hear back. But then again, it's the NCAA.
Hearing that from like a lot of different schools who are waiting on waivers.
There's kind of a backlog.
Oh, we'll hear any other day. Well, yeah. It's been 2 weeks.
There's kind of, there's a backlog of waivers because right. there's so many. I mean, think about it. Nebraska had three guys that became immediately eligible that just recently, Brady Hyman is eligible, Carrington Davis is eligible, and Amir Harris was ruled eligible. And so people have gotten the ruling, but then again, you don't really know when these waivers were applied or what the circumstances are. So the thing with Shamil is like, it matters, but it doesn't. Like it definitely matters.
It matters
because
for
they
him,
need him
probably. Yeah.
Yeah, but this is also, this is also a point where like, if he gets eligible now, I mean, he's lost three games and right. you know, whatever.
Yeah. I
so we'll see. I mean,
it's interesting. Cause like he, obviously the rule is like you have to complete, I think the way it's explained to me is that you have to complete a year in residency
mm-hmm.
At the school that you transferred to. So obviously he has like,
because he didn't
waiver aside, mm-hmm. you know, he didn't get on Nebraska's campus until Hoiberg got here. So he wasn't like, he hasn't completed his year in residency yet, but you know, he did leave a place where his coach was fired, or not fired, his coach left.
Yeah.
So
to a place where the other coach
normally
had been fired. Yeah.
That means that you can get that waiver and you don't have to complete that year of residency. So
right.
So
I don't know. I mean, at this exact second, I don't know the full story in terms of why they decided to there could be a possibility where they didn't, again, they didn't need a half season waiver or they were just going to let it, you know, whatever. I don't know the full, I mean, all that stuff is really tricky because it's really, really confidential and there's a lot of personal information in all these waivers and a lot of people don't like talking about them because
that's what's tough because
it's really tough to talk.
You hear, especially from when you start comparing and contrasting cases, like why did this guy get eligible mm-hmm. and why did this guy not get eligible? And it doesn't really make sense, but you don't really know the full
story.
You don't
get an answer. Yeah, you don't get an answer.
And nobody really wants to share the full story.
Exactly.
And
so we'll see. I mean, I imagine that there should be, just based on like when they've applied for it. Like, it's got to be coming soon.
Yeah.
And you would hope, and for Shamil's sake, that that they would. So it matters because
I always thought it was like a no-brainer if you're if you had a coaching change at your old school, you got to be immediately eligible at your new school.
I agree. I thought there's been precedent for it before, but there's also been like bad decisions by NCAA before as well.
Yeah.
I think it's important because I think if Shamil does become eligible, I think he's their, you know, either their first guy off the bench or like eventually starter. Mm. Like I would have no qualms if they just put him in one of the four guards that they start with Ivan at the center position, quote unquote center position. But it also, it's one of those things where like, you know, you want Shamil for as long as you can.
Yeah.
And he's a really good talent. So like if it does get denied, then next year when you get Delano Banton back and you get Derek Walker and you get Shamil, that like next year is really what this year is about. So I think it'd be too bad because the kid's sitting out for so long and Nebraska's kind of been drug along. But I don't know if it would be necessarily the end of the world in terms of like Nebraska's long-term success.
Right.
So anyway, I just wanted to like address that because I haven't written about it because I don't want to write.
Well, you could do a daily update.
I don't want to do a daily or a weekly update. Like if nothing has happened, that's not news in my opinion. So like whenever the decision comes down, then I was going to synthesize all the information. But like there's been talk about it and Fred was asked about it on Monday and I think things are coming up. So that's just kind of that's the Shamil update.
The update. All right. If Nebraska and Creighton played today, who would you get? Who would you pick?
I pick Creighton by like 15.
Dang, that's about the number I was looking at.
Yeah.
I think Creighton would have a very good first half, and then Nebraska might make a comeback in the
second. Ooh, I like this. Ooh, I like that idea. But okay, but the problem is if Creighton goes up like 20, Nebraska doesn't deal with difficult things very well.
Oh, true.
You know?
But this will be like, it's a pride game. If they were to play right now, it'd be a pride game.
Oh, they'd
muster up.
You know what we need to do too? I don't care what Vegas says. We need to set our own line.
Yeah, sure. And we'll probably record a podcast before the game.
For sure, yeah.
Like before the line's even set, so.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, okay, right now, what is the line right now?
I put
now?
It at like
15 and a half?
14, 15 and a half, yeah. Yeah. Right. Like if it's like 18, I think Nebraska could cover like this second. But then again, just to be fair, I'm a very bad gambler. So like I don't, I'm maybe not the guy to really go to for this.
True.
Who do you are you? You said you're
okay. Yeah, I pick Creighton. So, all right, we'll be back. I don't know if we'll do a Thanksgiving week pod or not, just because Nebraska's got a tournament that starts on Monday, and then Creighton's tournament starts on Thursday. So we may skip a week again and come back.
That's Creighton and Nebraska week.
Creighton Nebraska week. Yeah. So we'll pod it up. Maybe even dual pod that week. You never
that's
know.
That's gonna be heavy. That's gonna be a big week.
It'll be a lot of fun. Can't wait for that game. It's kind of the reason why we formed this podcast, honestly. So yeah. It is the peak of the half court press. Anyway, we'll be back very soon. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you.